Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hello, welcome back to Camp Half Pod. We are your head counselors. I'm Erin, daughter of Athena.
And I'm Manasa, daughter of Persephone. Today we're recapping and discussing episode 3 of the Percy Jackson Disney Plus show.
Time for Medusa.
And this
or
one,
woman.
This one was fun because it was so different than in the books, but it made sense to today's climate and like all the recent conversations that we've had about Medusa. And looking back at our old outline, it's funny because we went through like, oh, what is the myth of Medusa? And I popped off because I was upset about her story, which is fair.
About like the way it was portrayed in this or about her story in general?
Her story in general. The way she's portrayed, I thought was reasonable for a children's book that came out in 2006 or whenever it did.
Yeah.
And I liked how they included that, but she also is not, like, she is a monster. Like, she is not someone who is good to them. Like, her alternatives is not... is still harming other children. So you have to have both, right? You have to have a reason that Percy is allowed to kill her. If she's like just another woman scorned by his father and then Percy kills her, it's just like, oh, darkening. His first act of being a demigod is murder.
I mean, he does kill the Minotaur, but I do think that it doesn't feel the same. Like that's more like self-defense. And also the Minotaur isn't humanized.
He doesn't have a conversation with the Minotaur. So I loved that you watched this before I did. And so you were really hyping it up and it lived to its hype. So why don't you tell me what you thought about, like, when you saw Medusa, first impressions?
Oh, it was so... I'd seen her, like, promotional picture. But I was very, I mean, they were, the second they started doing things differently from the book, which we'll talk about that when we get kind of into the scenes, the second they started doing things differently, I was like, oh, like I was intrigued. I wasn't really sure where it was going, which is kind of fun as a viewer of someone who's read these books a lot of times to still be on the edge of my seat, be on my toes. And each change, I found myself pleasantly surprised, which is a lot of the time with changes from books, like beloved books, it's hard to let go of. But this, a lot of these changes, I was super, they made me think a lot about the way that monsters are portrayed. And it also made me think a lot about some of the conversations we had, especially that in like Heroes of Olympus and in Trials of Apollo, that I think some of Rick's later works and maybe even like the last book or two of Percy Jackson, they lend themselves to conversations about like who we define as monsters, you know. Makes me think of our whole thing about Gaia, where we're like, she's not wrong, but she's going about it really poorly. And I think some of those thoughts that I'm sure Rick has when he writes these retellings bled into this different portrayal of Medusa.
Yeah, I think that's exactly it. She's not wrong, but the way she goes about it is incorrect. It also is funny because so we're recording this the day or 2 days technically after the first two episodes dropped, and my TikTok, first because you know I've been sending things to Erin, so you know my For You page, my algorithm is catching up and giving me all the Percy Jackson stuff. Also, there's a lot more Percy Jackson stuff because there's so much movie content out, I mean TV show content out there. I realized on how much of a bubble I've been in well, obviously because I didn't know about, you know, whatever happened to Jason and all that stuff in Trials of Apollo. Clearly, I am not online as I think I am, but I didn't realize how much of a bubble I've been in besides the occasional one or two emails I got when they cast Leia as Annabeth. I haven't really heard anyone being upset about Walker being cast or any of the cast being as they are. And it's been really weird for me to open up all these comments on these TikToks.
Oh my God.
So many people are genuinely upset. And it's so funny to come of like the people who are very loyal to the movies, which is definitely not anyone who are really in our fandom, who are in very loyal to our movies. And they are like trying to portray the differences as like astronomically, like they're hindrances to them watching the TV show. They're like, we can't watch it because Percy doesn't have black hair. And I understand the initial, like, that's what we were talking about the first two episodes, is the initial letting go of what we believe to be in the book and how we imagine it in our own head, but still enjoying some media that is now up to date to represent the diversity that we want to see on our screens.
Yeah. And it's like, yeah, that letting go process. And I think if you truly love this story, you should be able to zoom out of whatever images of characters, their hair color, their race, etc., whatever you had in your head, be able to zoom out and look critically, like, is this story still, like, at the heart telling the same thing? And perhaps even enhanced by, like, the different types of people that they cast to play these roles. And I think that's, like, when I see people that are like, I can't watch it because of XYZ, because of the casting, I'm like, do you really care about the story then? Because Rick is involved in the story, which me makes, and from what I've seen so far, I think they're still hitting those main notes of the heart of the Percy Jackson story and even expanding some of them, like Percy and Sally's relationship has been expanded in the show so far. It just makes me doubt, you know, what they really took from the story if they're that hung up on appearances. Which is fun, which I doubt is any of our lovely listeners.
Especially if you are kind of keeping up. Obviously, we want to, I think something that we're so enchanted and we just feel so lucky that we've got a version that matches with what we wanted. And after getting not a great retelling in a movie where it was kind of disrespectful to the original source material, I think we should also, like, we're gonna voice things that we don't like and changes that we wished we had seen, but that's not going to be, you know, we're not gonna hold on too tightly to, like, for example, this Medusa, the Annabeth is very different of a character than she was in the book, and letting go of the version of Annabeth that was kind of dumb but supposed to be smart. And in this one, she's
into the shop for a burger in the books. Like, that was a moment in the books. I'm like, Child of Athena, who? They definitely have her much smarter in this show.
Which is, like, reasonable. She's using logic. They immediately notice all these statues and she connects the dots. They're also like, nobody else but somebody who is from our world would have made a shop on a satyr's path.
Yeah.
And so she connects the dots and I'm getting ahead of myself, but it was just wild to open up those comments and see people trying to defend themselves.
Yeah. Especially like, I'm just like, I feel like when I'm on Camp Half Pod's Instagram and TikTok, which I've now made two TikToks, round of applause, and Twitter, it is more like the very loyal fandom that's really excited about these. And then, you know, occasionally I look at the comments on like, the other day I saw Instagram's Instagram account did some kind of like behind the scenes thing with the cast. And I opened the comments and half of them are complaining about the features on it, like the new update on Instagram. I was like, why are you commenting that here? But a bunch of them were like very loyal to the movies or just straight up being really racist and problematic. And I was like, oh, this conversation's still happening on the internet. People suck.
Yeah.
The end.
A little safe bubble in our echo chamber. Mm-hmm.
I know.
It is interesting. But that being said, we are going to talk about Medusa. I think that we have a lot to talk about with each other because I just kind of texted Aaron my live reactions while I was watching it, which is fun. But we haven't had a chance to like really sit down and talk about it. So I have a feeling this is going to be a long episode. So
probably. Hold
on to your butts. Yeah.
I'm like, we already had a lot of thoughts on Medusa anyway, which is fascinating because like I wrote down in my notes, this only aligns with three chapters of the book. Like it's like chapters 9 through 11. And our own episodes is kind of like the very tail end of our episode 4 and mostly just our episode 5 that we discussed. If you're someone who's maybe listening along to those old episodes or anything, So it's not like a big chunk of the book, but this is just such a rich part of the book. And also they expanded a lot with Medusa. So let's get into it.
So our episode summary from Disney Plus itself says, Percy's tasked with the quest to return Zeus's stolen master bolt to stop a war between the gods. Choosing Annabeth and Grover as his quest mates, they set off to retrieve it from the underworld. Enemies derail their journey before it's barely begun, and the three seek refuge from a stranger that could pose even more of a dangerous threat.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, this episode opens like we're immediately getting into it. Percy is going up above the big house to the Oracle, he calls her, he says she looks like a Halloween decoration. Damn.
Which I don't know if I just never read the scene properly. You know, the way that you kind of skim and your brain fills in the blanks. Because the moment they were like mummified Oracle with all of her weird like outfits on, I still imagined her in a coffin. So seeing her seated on a seat, which I don't think that's in the book.
No, but as soon as they said
mummy, I was like, oh, she's like a mummy. With a weird wig on, and she looks kind of cartoonish. And this one, it took me a moment. He had to get a little bit closer before I even realized that she was kind of mummified, because she looks just kind of like a doll.
Yeah. I mean, he's right. She looks like a Halloween prop. But yeah, I just pulled up our old outline to see, because we wrote down, we actually took notes on this, on her appearance. And in the book, she's described as a mummy wearing a tie-dyed sundress, beaded necklaces, and a headband over long black hair, and her face is leathery. So I guess she's not really a mummy, because she has skin that's, like, visible. So yeah, I think she was pretty much like how I pictured it in my head, as just like a decrepit old lady in a chair in an attic.
What was really fun is that instead of the mist and the scary, the eyes glowing and all of that stuff, we get a vision of Gabe, who tells us the prophecy. And we only see a section of the prophecy, by the way.
Yeah.
The first couple lines. And I think it was a mixture of, like, it made it funny that this, like, very New York accent comes out. And Gabe, who's very much this comedic cartoon character and someone that Percy despises, is having to give him the quest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And my thought is also it's to bring Gabe back up. Because in the book at this point, that, like, once Percy's at camp, he's immediately seeing those, like, newspaper articles where Gabe is like, my stepchild has run away and probably killed my girlfriend or wife. I don't remember if they're married. And spreading slander about him. Whereas maybe this is a way to, like, remind the viewers, like, hey, this guy, he's still out and about and he still sucks. But he's definitely a lot funnier in the show than the book. Yes. Which I did see someone on Twitter, because people were complaining about that. And I did see someone have a good point where they were like, do you guys want to see Sally being abused? Like, were you wanting that? And I was like, that's a good point. I actually would prefer to see her just with a guy that's kind of annoying instead of, like, extremely abusive. So,
but it's fair. The thing that's been brought up on our Discord, and we've discussed it a bit, is at the end of this, in the books at least, Sally Nike kills Gabe.
Yeah.
And if he's just kind of annoying, it makes her more of a villain than this heroic battered woman moment.
Okay, but, like, also, we should just be able to kill men for being annoying, actually. I'm actually a fan of that.
I'm just curious if they took that out completely. I mean, obviously, we won't know until we'll watch it. And she just leaves him, and she just has a moment where she's like, goodbye. Or if we find out that this guy, who in front of Percy is just kind of annoying, is actually very much a monster.
Yeah, he could be. I mean, like, in the very first episode, Sally said something along the lines of, like, just because it looks like a monster doesn't mean it is a monster. So, you know, maybe Gabe, we're going to get some more on Gabe sucking. Or so, not. I'm still a fan of killing him.
Me too. I really hope she kills him. I don't know if a lot of people were wondering if it was because it was on Disney and they were trying to, like, be like, oh, murder, maybe not, but we'll see.
Yeah. Well, but then Percy kills Medusa, as we'll see here. So I guess murder is okay if they're invisible.
Yeah. Well, it was very fun in this one because Annabeth instead of inserting herself immediately, signing up for the prophecy, the quest, not giving Percy a choice, she's chosen without any hesitation by Percy. He gets the entire, like, all the counselors from all the head counselors from all the cabins lined up. He chooses Annabeth before anyone even gets a chance to, like, make their, plea their case, essentially. And Annabeth does a good job of, like, not making eye contact. She's, like, clearly very surprised, but...
Yeah. Because, I mean, I think as a viewer, if I was only watching this show, I might be a little bit surprised that he chose her, because it's established that he's, like, very weirded out by her. But he does know that she really wants a quest. And we later learn in the show version his logic with choosing her. But at this point, it's kind of just like, oh, all right, I guess they're friends now.
What is also kind of nice is that he's just kind of weirded out by her. And there isn't this immediate established hatred of like, well, I hate you because our parents should hate each other. Instead, it's like they're genuinely annoyed by each other's personality.
In the book, Annabeth, like, when they meet, she's like, you know, we're not supposed to like each other because our parents hate each other, and very quickly. Whereas in this, like, she does, it's brought up later that their parents hate each other, more so by Medusa. But in this, you're right, they just don't like each other. Or more, Percy thinks she's weird.
Yeah.
You can't really get a read on what she thinks of Percy. I think she thinks he's annoying, but she's very intrigued by him.
So we get Luke giving Percy his shoes, the Hermes shoes. That then we find out that Percy chose Annabeth over Luke, even though he clearly has more of a friendship and a bond with Luke, because he knows that Luke is going to choose Annabeth no matter what. And he doesn't trust Annabeth, but he also trusts that he has different motivations. He doesn't give a shit about this quest, honestly. So he knows that this quest has to be finished. So he knows Annabeth will go and finish the quest without him if he takes a detour and goes gets his mom.
Yeah. Whereas, and I realized we forgot to mention that there is a scene before that with him choosing Grover, and he goes out to the stables and invites Grover to come with him because he trusts Grover. And also, Grover's been punished to, like, shovel poop because he told Percy about his mom at the end of the last episode.
And there's a moment while Grover asks him why he's choosing him that Percy has a flashback to the Oracle finishing the rest of the prophecy. And he talks about how someone he calls a friend will betray him. And he knows Grover won't, because Grover has stuck his neck out. Even when it means hurting Percy's feelings, he's doing the best for Percy. I think this episode really does a good job of showing how much Percy and Grover really like each other, and they have this very, like, special bond. I think it's very cute, because a lot of us are focused on the Percibeth of it all, but the truth is, this book is very much an establishment of Grover and Percy's friendship.
Yeah, like, Percibeth is really not a thing yet. It's the slow burn. It's quite a slow burn. We have a while to get to any of that, but I think this is the friendship book.
Yeah, this is the friendship book between Percy and Grover, and, like, baseline establishment of, like, he's like, Annabeth is my friend. And then second book, Sea of Monsters, Grover is MIA. And so he and Annabeth really build that relationship and find each other's flaws and all of that stuff. That's really fun to read. Even though we always rank it pretty low, I think.
I honestly love it, though. Like, one of my favorite moments is in that, like, when they're, like, hugging underwater. I'm gonna cry seeing that. They better green light this stuff. Maybe by the time this episode is out, they'll already have announced 5 seasons. Who knows?
So as they go start their quest, they pass the pine tree with Annabeth going to say bye to Thalia. So that's as they call her. And in that moment, that's when we get the backstory of Thalia and how she got turned into a pine tree. And Annabeth is obviously very protective of her friend. And Percy voices what I've always felt. And I was thinking about this a lot, of, like, if they're the gods, they're literally the most powerful beings in the universe. The best way they did to honor her for her sacrifice and being Zeus's daughter was turning her into a tree.
Yeah, and, like, we know the gods have turned people into gods before, and they're just like, a tree will do.
Well, it's seen over and over again that these gods mm-hmm. keep turning people that they love, instead of letting them die in peace, honestly, they keep making them plants.
What is up with that?
It feels almost more of a punishment than like, oh, I'm honoring you by allowing you to live longer as a different form. It's like, oh my God, you can't even go and try for rebirth. You have to be a plant forever.
Yeah. You're stuck. Yeah, I love that line of Percy's, and I think he speaks what a lot of us as the viewers slash readers of this series think when we learn this. But it pisses off Annabeth. She's just like, don't doubt the gods. This is my special loyal. Tree friend. This is my best friend tree. Don't slander her. Yeah.
Annabeth, this version of Annabeth is like, there is no wrong the gods have ever done. My mom is the best. Mm-hmm. Gods are the best. They're always correct. We are so honored to be in their presence. And Percy is very much like, if a god was to show up in front of me right now, I'd deck him in the face.
Yeah, which he does later, which I'm very excited to see. He's ready. I mean, Percy's very much also like a god that was good would not have let my mom die. So
yeah, very true.
Yeah.
They get on their bus, the Greyhound mm-hmm. bus, and there Percy and Annabeth continue to bicker. She's very good at being deadpan, where she's mm-hmm. joking, but you can't tell. So someone who's a little bit slower, such as Percy and I, can't really tell if she's joking or not, or making fun mm-hmm. of him. It's very elite, mean girl vibes. Someone who's mm-hmm. very much like prickly.
Yeah.
Because mm-hmm. Annabeth is just like, this is what we're going to do. You're clearly stupid. You have no idea what you're doing. The gods are always correct. And Percy keeps fighting her on each step.
Yeah. And he has a moment where he's like, because she wants to go get snacks or something. And he's like, I want to go get snacks. And he, you know, Grover is like, we should just, you know, Annabeth wants to do what she wants to do. Annabeth knows best. And Percy's like, no, she doesn't. I know best. They're very much butting heads over this, even though he does listen to her. And clearly she's the leader on this quest. He pushes back a lot, which pisses her off.
Grover tries to sing a consensus song to get everyone to go along. It was so like teen counselor at a camp.
Mm-hmm.
Not given any tools besides maybe a little bit of music. And there's no adults present. You're trying to keep people who are your peers from fighting each other. You have a song about it.
It made me realize that his pan flute hasn't been in it yet, which maybe is for the best, because we made a lot of fun of how in battle scenes he was just playing the flute in the background, and that might look kind of ridiculous on screen, but this felt like a shout out, you know, bringing us up to speed with the fact that Grovers, or satyrs in general, are very musical and song is very powerful to them. And it was also very funny. He started singing and I was like, what is happening?
Also, Percy and Annabeth's reaction while he's singing mm-hmm. is beautiful.
Yeah. They're both like, are you done? I'm going to go get snacks. Bye.
Then we see Electo come on. We see Annabeth, peak Annabeth having the brain cell moment is she mm-hmm. notices Electo immediately, clocks her, puts invisibility hat on and tries to, you know, do some diplomacy, like get off the mm-hmm. bus, stop bothering us. This is not going to end well for you. Leave us alone. And Electo instead offers Annabeth to continue on her quest. They just want Percy. Mm-hmm. And in a logical situation, Annabeth could have taken that, like get rid of the unforgivable child? What is the thing?
What is the I keep on illegal? No, what is the word? Oh no, we've lost it.
Forbidden child.
Unforgivable. What did he do?
The forbidden child, it's against the rules. Annabeth should give him up. She can continue on her quest. Makes a lot of sense. But it also is not nice and it's not loyal. And Annabeth, mm-hmm. at the end of the day, is loyal to her people. So it's mm-hmm. the first step we see of this trio actually becoming a good unit.
Yeah, and I think that in the show, they're definitely trying to play up the angle that, like, Annabeth is going to be the one to betray Percy. Because, you know, she's invisible. We don't fully see how she reacts to being offered this until we see her fight, like, kill the Furies. I almost called them Furries. And that shows, like, oh, I think as a viewer, for a moment, you're like, what's she going to do? And then you're like, oh, okay, So clearly that didn't get to her. Even if she considered it, it didn't get to her.
And I think that we see it a lot in television. It's a very popular trope of someone agreeing to betray in the beginning, but then forming a bond with a person they're supposed to betray and then changing their mind. I think that might have been something that they could have tried to play up instead of someone who was like very down from the get-go to betray.
Yeah, very true. Yeah, so then we have the scene of them fighting the Furies, because all Electo and her sisters are all on the train, the bus. Annabeth kills one of the Furies. They climb out a window. The bus notably does not explode like it did in the books, but they climb out the window and run for the forest.
This is where they head over to the Satyr Path, and Grover says that anyone who's around in the Satyr Path is going to be from their world. And that's how we know that when they follow the path to Medusa, that they immediately clock that it's going to be a monster or it's going to be like someone from mythology. It's not going to be a normal person. The reason they go that way is Grover smells food, which is very true to the books. But instead of both, all of them being completely blinded by the fact that there's food and going immediately and just sitting at this person's table and eating, they walk in and they're cornered because Electo's behind them. And Electo's afraid of Medusa, and Medusa comes up, and she is gorgeous. Gorgeous, gorgeous, gorgeous.
Gorgeous. I looked up the actress. Beautiful woman. She's very attractive. Highly recommend, respectfully.
She introduces herself. She's like, I am Medusa. So there's no question of who she is, but she basically offers them food and a place to stay, knowing that Electo can't get to them. And Percy, for some reason, feels like he can trust her, which is hilarious because he immediately does not trust her later.
Yeah. And it's because he thinks back to, he tells them, he's like, my mom told me her story. And his mom clearly told him a very sympathetic version of Medusa. I wonder like how in depth she got on Medusa's story and like what she told Percy exactly. But clearly she told him a version of Medusa that makes him sympathetic or more trusting of her than Electo, of course, which, you know, a lot more people are more trusting than Electo at this point since she's like openly tried to maul Percy multiple times. Also, Medusa has food.
Also, the fact that I think about it often, if he got this story from his mom, Sally is telling him a story that she knows about the guy, like Percy's father.
Yeah.
Like how could that framed in her mind of like, the guy that I loved and I have a child with is capable of this?
Yeah. My understanding of Sally was always that, and I don't know if this is like my own headcanon or was alluded to in the book, but I always assumed that she didn't know much about Greek mythology until after she had Percy. Like, I always imagined her reading all the myths after she became pregnant, trying to learn everything she could. And in that headcanon that I have, I like the layers of, you know, sleeping with this man and falling in love with him and then learning all of the terrible things he's done and that he's the father of your child.
So Medusa plays to Percy's sympathy, but she's also trying to play to Annabeth's as well. She's like, your mom sucks, dude. And this is what she did to me because I fell in love with Poseidon and I, quote unquote, embarrassed Athena, which is a very clever way of telling the story without telling. Because honestly, as soon as we saw Poseidon on screen, I think we'd throw things at the screen. We can't do that.
Yeah. Yeah. So it needs to be child appropriate.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, it's interesting that she like appeals to Annabeth and she says, we're actually not that different. I also like I used to worship Athena. I used to dedicate my life to her. And she can immediately tell that Annabeth has also dedicated her life to Athena and is very loyal to her mother.
I loved your note here where you're like, Annabeth says, I actually don't believe women.
Because Medusa calls herself, she's like, I'm not a monster, I'm a survivor. And Annabeth is like, fuck you, I don't believe women. Incredible.
In some ways, yes, Medusa is still a monster. She did kill a bunch of satyrs. She's killed a lot of people. There's a lot of stuff like that. And we get a one-on-one moment where Medusa goes back and is cooking them food. And Percy goes to join her just to have a discussion. And in that moment, Medusa offers to turn Annabeth and Grover to stone so that Percy has full range to go and get his mom without anyone hindering him.
Mm-hmm.
Percy obviously immediately is like, we gotta leave. That was not a chill thing to offer me. That means that you were not who I thought you were.
Yeah, the shot is like she turns around and he's gone suddenly.
Yeah, which is good for him for being so quiet in exit. I would have tripped over myself.
I know, same. I mean, he tripped in like the last episode, just like walking. So impressive. This was a big feat for him.
Yeah. So Annabeth, Percy, and Grover, they run downstairs. They think it's an exit, but it's really reminded me of the room at the end of National Geographic where they found all the treasure. Not National Geographic. What is it called?
National Treasure. The National Treasure reference. National
Geographic. Jesus Christ. Because they have...
I totally see what you're talking about now.
It's the lighting actually, of it.
I think Dan Schatz worked on National Treasure.
Really? That makes so much sense.
One of them did. It was either Dan Schatz or... Yeah, he worked on National Treasure, so... Dan, if you're listening to our podcast, which I would be very impressed and surprised and shocked, was that on purpose? I'm so sorry. Was that on purpose? Let us know.
It was the lighting of it where they have the very old oil trenches where you light fire and it slowly catches to reveal the rest of the room, which is actually kind of a horrifying scene of a bunch of tourists, satyrs, and a lot of innocent people, because Medusa has the monsters displayed as statues on her lawn, but the innocent people are in the basement and they're being shipped out. There's a bunch of crates. She follows them down and they're all trying to hide from her while also not looking at her. Where she explains that she sends her statues all over the world, to museums, to collectors, that they are revered everywhere, obviously, because they look so lifelike.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good thing. Percy clearly files that away based on what he does at the end. He's like, oh, there's free shipping here.
Prime?
Is this Prime shipping? One-day shipping? Mm-hmm. Awesome.
Grover puts on the shoes, flies away on accident.
It's a hot mess, very true to the book. And, you know, granted, the movie did include that too, so.
Very important to his character.
And so Medusa is then actively hunting, specifically Percy and Annabeth. She really honestly doesn't seem to have a problem with Grover. He just happens to be there, and clearly she has a penchant for killing satyrs. She's kind of actively targeting them, being on their path. But she's hunting after Percy and Annabeth. And she says, we are not our parents until we choose to be, and you both have chosen to be, which is very creepy. And I think the first part is really interesting, but the second part, she thinks they've chosen simply because Annabeth is still very loyal to Athena. Though I do think we can see when Medusa is telling her story, despite Annabeth being like, I don't believe women, you can see Leah does a really great job of showing in her face that there's a little bit of doubt there for her godly parent. She's a little bit like, my mom has never showed up for me. And that's interesting.
Yeah, and Annabeth has read a bunch of myths before in her life, so she understands that the gods have done this before. Why would it be a surprise that they are the villains in this story as well?
Yeah, but she so badly wants to believe that her mom is not. Which, knowing what we know about Annabeth, she was abandoned as a child, like she ran away, but her dad and her stepmom didn't show her the love she needed, and so she's been clinging to this idea that her mom loves her and her mom cares about her and listens to her. And this is kind of the start of her realizing that, or coming to terms with the fact that her mom has never actually been there for her.
And that's why she doesn't like Percy, because Percy keeps pointing this out, and Percy's a reminder that the gods don't show up, because he keeps asking for proof. And Annabeth doesn't have any, and that definitely gets under her skin.
Yeah, because she doesn't want to, like, come to that conclusion. She doesn't want to reckon with that. Because if she doesn't have Athena, what does she have? We know she also doesn't really have any friends at camp, at least in the books, and I don't think in the show. Like, she's very respected, but it doesn't seem like she's very social.
No.
Or friendly.
What I missed And again, this is back to our conversation of making sure that this TV show is a bit more timeless. The movie, on the other hand, was very much cemented in the year that it was released with the music and also the iPod Touch reflection. I did miss it a little bit. And I also thought it was interesting that instead of it being just Percy going at it and Annabeth telling him, hey, remember the myth, and Percy obviously has no idea of the myth, and he comes to it by himself. It is a very much a team effort. They work very seamlessly as a team. I liked that. It was interesting. I did miss the kind of impromptu, just like instinctive Percy reaction, because we still don't really know if he's good as a, and skilled as a fighter, which was pretty established in the beginning of the book. But here we're still kind of like, Annabeth is the one who killed what's her name?
Electo's sister. I don't know her name.
Yeah. With her knife throw, she's the one who's been the best fighter so far. And this was just, it was nice though that they came together after bickering for the entire episode to do the murder.
Mm-hmm. We come together to murder Percy and Annabeth. Or like, we both love killing, actually. This is our common ground. But yeah, so how they kill her is different. Like you said, instead of the, I think it's like a reflective like garden thingy in the book, those like circles that you stick, I don't know what they're called, a spear. And you know, in the movie it was the iconic iPod Touch or early iPhone. But they kill Medusa. Like you said, like Annabeth puts the invisibility cap on her head. Percy slices her head off. They're working together. And now Medusa is dead. And now they have to decide what to do with her. But before we go into that, I did want to play. So we got a clip from an interview with the showrunners. And this is from specifically from John Steinberg, who is one of the executive producers of the show, talking about the character of Medusa and this conversation of like, what is a monster? What isn't a monster? So I'm going to play this real quick.
To me, that was one of the toughest puzzles of the project was Medusa. You do the Minotaur and it's complicated, but everybody kind of knows, everybody has a job to do, and it's a huge technical exercise with a huge team. And Medusa didn't want that. The more you tried to design her as a creature, the less interesting she got to me. And it took a minute to back out of that process and start to realize that what we were really trying to figure out is who she is, not what she looks like. And that the Medusa that I had seen in the iterations that I was familiar with, leaned heavy on the monster. And even when she was, portrayed in more human form, she's this very imposing, Mithurin, tall kind of a presence. And the moment Jess popped into my head, everything clicked into place. That doesn't look like that. That doesn't sound like that. I want to hear that woman tell a story about how she got this way and care.
I loved how they talked about Medusa and the way, how much thought went into how they're portraying this character. Because this is, while the Minotaur is like the first big monster that we meet, this is the first monster that's like, has dialogue and has like a narrative outside of just being a big man that wears, or big man, big monster that wears tidy whities. So I think it was definitely really important the way that they chose to portray her.
And this is a setup for the rest of the show. We keep getting monsters and characters that continue to probe and make Percy doubt his quest. And so this was a great setup for that, because the rest of it is like, it's one thing when it's just being chased by scary monsters. He's like, yeah, this is clearly evil and I am good. Whereas when it's someone with a dialogue and a backstory, and they came to her home. They walked into her home and murdered her. Like, yeah. There has to be something that
she,
like,
fed them.
Yeah.
She was going to murder them, but she did feed them first. That's important.
I also thought that the using the Yankee cap to hide mm-hmm. her severed head was smart, because I think by making her look less like a monster and making yeah. her look like a person, having her head just, you know, be something that Percy holds and you see is going to yeah. make it hard for like parents to want to let their young children watch it. So instead,
that's a good point.
Mm-hmm. We have Walker pretending to hold air. So it's like, I know, you know, I Oscar love that worthy. For him.
Yeah, and that's a good point, because I remember we went to some press conferences with the costume designers too. And Tish Monahan, I remember talking specifically about designing the Medusa outfit. We do have a little short audio clip from Tish Monahan just about the costume design that I wanted to play. So we will play that here.
When I first had my initial discussions about Medusa, our two executive creative producers really wanted her to appear sympathetic. They wanted her to have, a beautiful hat that could be on a slant that could cover her, you know, hair, her snakes. So her wearing a hat then dictated a certain kind of garment.
Percy and Annabeth argue because both of them are unhappy of what to do. They have this head. What are they going to do with it? Because it's a powerful weapon. It can be used to turn anyone to stone. If someone, either on purpose or on accident, finds it, it could cause a lot of harm. Percy's just yeah. like, just bury the head with the cap and get rid of, so you can get rid of the cap, or get rid of the head, everything. Mm-hmm. And Annabeth is so calm, and she was just like, yeah, let's do it. And then just starts insulting Percy.
Yeah. And they also bring up both of them are clearly not trusting each other, because Alecto said something in front of everyone during the confrontation with Medusa outside, mentioned like, you could have accepted my offer, to Annabeth. And then Medusa says something along the same lines to Percy when she's hunting them down below in the National Treasure area. So they're both just like, Annabeth is like, what was she talking about? And Percy's like, what was she talking about to you? And they are really not trusting each other. And then, you know, it makes matters worse that Percy wants to bury the one item that she values in the ground and leave it forever.
Which is funny, because instead of saying, no, that object means a lot to me, we have to protect it, my mom gave it to me, it's the only thing that my mom has ever given to me, Annabeth says, yeah, like completely stone-faced, mm-hmm. says mm-hmm. yes. And then offers like a worse solution as well, and to kind of get under Percy's skin. And the only reason that we find out about this is Grover is able to, he knows Annabeth, he's known her yeah. for a long time, and he's able to tell Percy like, hey, this is something that's really important, but don't suggest that. Annabeth, like, you have to, like, Percy is right, we have to get rid of the head. Like, we need to figure out a solution. And mm-hmm. also just tell us what's going on. Why are you picking on? Like, why are you both not trusting each other?
Yeah.
And I just felt very seen in that moment, mm-hmm. because the way that Annabeth isn't immediately communicative is kind of like how I am. Instead of speaking up, I'll just like be
you. That was very you. Honestly, now I'm thinking, I feel like I've seen you do that when someone says something, you're just like, yeah. And I'm just like, oh, she does not want to do that.
And then I'm mean. And so it's not a great thing. I don't recommend it. I think it's much better to be communicative and honest about your emotions. But my reaction is usually to then go for the jugular and be mean about it. Like, how dare you say this to me? I'm going to keep a straight face and say something equally devastating to you.
Exactly. Perfect solution. I mean, if Annabeth does it, then it's fine.
Exactly. And Annabeth's the healthiest person we know.
Oh, she's incredibly emotionally healthy. Exactly.
This is the moment where Percy tells them what the Oracle said about a friend betraying him. And he's like, well, I picked Grover because I trust you. And then he's like, I picked Annabeth because you're not a friend, so you can't betray me.
I thought that was so funny. And that's different, because in the books, he pretty early on, even though he finds Annabeth annoying and weird, he considers her a friend. Like, her and Luke are his friends. I mean, and Grover are his new friends at camp.
Yeah.
Whereas in this, he's just like, I never call you a friend, so you can't betray me if you're not my friend. And she looks hurt. She does look really hurt, which I think lends to the fact that I don't think she really has friends at camp. And she might have considered him more of a friend than he considered her
That's
a friend.
What I was going to say, too. I was like, I wonder if she was like, this is my friend. This is just how we talk to each other.
I think she was. I mean, there was that little clip. I've seen people like gifing it and sharing it in the second episode where she like fixes his armor, and she does it quite tenderly, honestly. And people are like, they're planting the Persebeth seed. And people were talking about how in Heroes of Olympus, Rick revealed that Annabeth had a crush on Percy since she was 12. And people are like, oh, they're really committing to that. So I think that's interesting. I would totally believe that she thinks they're friends. And he's just like, I'm not your friend.
I would also think it makes sense for her is that the two people she's closest to at camp are Luke and Grover, and Percy gels really well with them. He's very close with them. They like him too. So she's like, great, all of us are friends.
Poor Annabeth, that's so sad. And also like so real.
The way that if a boy who I had a crush on when I was 12, even now, said this to me, and I also thought he was a friend of mine, the way I would never recover.
Oh my God. The fact that she recovers to even be friends with him again. Like, not friends. Just kidding. According to Percy.
I also thought it was interesting that in the books, because Annabeth is just so annoying in like the best way, that she makes Percy recite the prophecy line by line the moment he gets it. And so he just tells them all the information up front, whereas he's being a lot more like playing his cards closer to the chest in this version. Is very interesting. I think it also says a lot more about this version of Percy.
Yeah. He's a lot less trusting.
Yeah.
Which could be, we did see a lot more background on him being bullied, really only having his mom as a trusted person. I mean, he was betrayed by Grover, and we know now he chose Grover because he trusts him. He's regained that trust. But he's definitely very jaded, even though camp is cool and it's cool and all that, you know, gods are real, whatever. He's like, I don't really trust a lot of you, which is interesting.
Also, the fact that Percy's fatal flaw, I'm just thinking of this now, fatal flaw is that he's so loyal to the people he loves. This line, getting this line from the Oracle must have been so devastating, because it's not only being betrayed by someone you know, it's being betrayed by someone you consider a friend, which he has so little of anyway. It must have wrecked him, especially to be given it in a moment where he's very emotionally unstable. I just was thinking about that. That poor boy.
Yeah. Oh. Oh. It's okay, Percy. It'll all work out. It's okay. We'll take care of you.
Annabeth and Percy find truce and like a middle ground, because they both realize they've been offered moments to betray each other and they both have turned it down. I think that makes them feel a little bit more trustworthy, like trusting of each other.
Yeah. And I think they both are realizing too that they're not, they probably aren't really cognizant of it, but they're both clearly really guarded and they don't trust easily. And the fact that both of them were offered to betray the other and they didn't, that clearly they're loyal. Even if they don't fully trust one another yet or are suspicious, they're both loyal to each other, which is really important for both their characters, just moving onwards.
Percy decides to do the most badass thing, is where he sends Medusa's head to Olympus. And
I was so glad they kept this. I had a moment where I was afraid they wouldn't, when he's like suggesting to bury the cap, and I was like, wait, no, you need to mail the head, it's important.
Also, Annabeth's cap is so important too. Yeah. So I was very surprised, and it makes sense that like instead they play this card. I liked it. It shows Grover also knows it. Like, he is friends with Annabeth. You can see that. Mm-hmm. But the I am impertinent line was so good.
So very good. Classic. He's just like, well, I am impertinent. So good.
Science's name sends it to Olympus, and they head on their merry way to the next spot, and Percy starts singing the consensus song, which is hilarious.
I know. Oh, it's so funny. I wonder if they're going to get Annabeth to sing it, you know?
Imagine that's the last scene of this.
I would be so happy. Yeah. We need to get everyone to sing it. It needs to be like a camp song around the fire. Yeah. Okay, and then we end on our very final shot. So we see the box that he mailed. Someone in like a UPS mail delivery suit is holding it. Lo and behold, it's Lin-Manuel Miranda. Of course, there he is. Disney and him have some kind of like blood oath. He has to be in every Disney thing now. But he's like whistling to himself, and he says as he is going up and he steps out of the elevator, he's like, "Oh, this is." He says something like, "This is going to be interesting, or you guys are going to love this." So he knows what's in that box.
I know. And I also loved the way they showed the elevator button appearing. Like, they made it very magical and made it very exciting, showing the Empire State Building, all of that stuff. It makes me so excited to see how Olympus is going to look.
Oh my gosh, I'm so excited. I was so mad. I was like, no, show me Olympus as he like walks off the shot. I was like, I want to see all their reactions to Medusa.
I know.
They're keeping us hanging.
I think also it'll make it more impactful when we see Olympus the first time through Percy's eyes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, excited. It'll be so good.
I think we did a lot of overall thoughts as we were going through
it. I know. We have too many thoughts.
I loved it. There were some things I kind of wish they made Annabeth a little bit more annoying just because it's such a signature.
Yeah. I think I was thinking about this like very deeply because I was like, I do wish she was more annoying, but I don't think it's wrong because I was thinking about how there's kind of a tendency with female characters and big franchises to turn them into like two-dimensional badass in a show and kind of take away their quirks, their nuances. But I don't think they've done that with Annabeth because she's still really weird. Like, she's still very off-putting. She's not subtle. Like, she is a badass, but she's not, you know, a perfect badass, can do everything kind of girl. Like, she's definitely has some social struggles with relating to people and making friends. I think I just so strongly identified with her annoyingness that I was like,
where is it?
Where is it? But that's okay. It's, yeah.
Yeah, I think that was my fear.
Projection of myself.
When she was immediately able to kill Electo's sister with that really cool knife throw, I was like, oh no, like she's going to be this badass who doesn't really have any room for growth. But I'm hoping, I didn't see that much again, and I'm hoping that she does have, like, I hope they mention that she doesn't have any friends and she talks about being lonely and not being understood. I think that's a really powerful subject, especially for 12-year-old girls to talk about. Like,
yeah,
that'd be such a good dialogue to have. So I hope they don't take that away.
Yeah, I think that's important. And I think, yeah, she is extremely, like, she's like one of the most powerful people at camp right now. The smart, the only one with the brain cell. So it is important that she's a badass too. I just, yeah, I think with a lot of female characters, sometimes we're like in an effort to make it a strong, powerful like role model for young women, we erase a lot of their the things that make them human. And I don't think they're doing that with Annabeth. I think that she's still very human and flawed. Just the flaws that were in the book that are not showing up were also my flaws. So I'm kind of like, why isn't she annoying like me? But that's fine. She's not for me. She's for the story and for
others.
New people getting into the fandom, or people who maybe didn't see themselves in Annabeth before and now can because of some of the ways they changed the way that she appears. And I love that.
All right, ready for some lightning bolt round questions?
I sure am. All right, let's hear. Well, first let's answer it in real time.
Okay.
Okay, so the rewind question, we answered this originally in episode 5. It was about, based on Annabeth's magical Yankees cap. So what magical item would you want as a gift from your godly parent?
So my godly parent is Persephone. I think what she's known for is gardening. And pomegranate seeds.
Oh, okay.
So I would think like a flower crown would be kind of cool. I don't know what it would do.
Like a magic one? Okay.
Yeah. Not just one that I wear to a Lana Del Rey concert.
Yeah. It's like plastic. It's from Claire's.
It's from Claire's.
I think that's where we bought ours for the Lana Del Rey concert.
Oh, 100%.
When we were like 17. It always comes back to Claire's. Anyway.
A flower crown. Invisibility would be cool, but either like it gave me the power to like control plants or control flowers, something like that. That would be cool because that way, I mean, it would be cool to have it at all times, but that way I also won't accidentally cause like a wildflower infestation in my house if I sneeze wrong. So it's like I can control when it's on and off. That'd be pretty cool.
Maybe you could like control your allergies too. You could make it so you're not allergic to things.
That would be so helpful.
To plants.
Yeah.
That'd be great. I'm like 99% sure I remember what I said. We'll see when I play this because I've thought about this object daily, basically. I think that I said, and I still think this, if I didn't say this, then this is my new answer. Also, it's still my answer. A book like an Ella Enchanted that can show you what people are doing or like where people are at any minute. I want to spy on people. I think that sounds so fun. And on a quest, I think it would be useful so I could see like where the monsters were hiding. I would probably find out that Luke was gonna betray me because I would spy on him. So I think that would work out for me. And it's a cute book.
That's what you said, yeah.
I'm pretty sure it's what I said because I have thought about this like for the past 3 years. I've thought about this anytime I'm like a godly object. I want that book. But with no man in it. I don't want a man inside of it, like in Ella Enchanted. Yeah.
Does that mean that you having like my location and Find My Friends is like this version of the book for you?
Maybe it is. Yeah. I mean, I definitely wouldn't want to like, maybe I think it would have a filter, like a filter if someone was doing something, you know, private. I don't want to see that. And
but
so
betraying you is private.
Like, if they're not wearing clothes, more like, you know, you know, if they're like in an indecent way, then I want it to have like a filter, like a not safe for work block on it because I don't want to accidentally peep on that. I just want to like spy on them doing, sneaky things.
All right. Let's see what I have no idea what I said. So I'm excited.
I don't know. I'm pretty sure I said this because I think about it. Okay. We all love Annabeth's magical Yankees cap. What magical item would you want as a gift from your godly parent?
Interesting. I feel like an easy out would be a sword because I expressed to you my desire for one earlier. Though I do love the idea of invisibility. Like Harry Potter really turned me on to that idea of being able to be invisible. Feels like it's somehow noble. But I would go with a sword, not going to lie.
Yeah, I like that.
A sword pen sounds amazing. Okay, continue. Oh, yeah.
It sounds so cool.
Yeah.
So I like literally want an invisibility hat also, but I had this conversation about magical items with, I'm not answering this as quickly as I want to, with Mike like a few like weeks ago, and he was like, you can't copy her. And so then I was like, I want a magic book. And then he made a lot of fun of me for wanting a book if I could have like a sword. But I have a specific, I want the book like in Ella Enchanted where you can ask it like, show me Lucinda, and it'll show you where the person is. Or like, I could be like, show me my enemies, and I could see what they were planning, and then I could like outplan them.
I was about to say, you want to Find My Friends app? Like, what do you mean?
But it would like show you magic like images, and like you could spy on them, but like from your cool book, like in Ella Enchanted.
Okay, but like you have to carry a book around with you.
I don't know. Maybe it can shrink. Like a pen can shrink. Maybe it's a book pen. I don't know.
Okay, I mean, I get that. That makes sense. Like, you want knowledge,
thank you.
Child of Athena.
Thank you. Thank you. I mostly want a spy. Not you making the same joke about Find My Friends.
Also, I have to, like, full disclosure, when I read this question earlier, my first thought was, like, I would want a gun. I can't say a gun.
Again, you've, like,
twice.
You've graduated to guns now from swords. Interesting. Listen. But yeah, I listening to that, I'm like, I think the reason I think about that a lot is because Mike changes what his, this is apparently a conversation we've had multiple times, because he'll sometimes be like, I want a trumpet that shoots fire. And then he'll be like, I want a sword that does this. Like, he changes it all the time. And so I'm just like, I want my book all the time. And so...
Well, I think this time reading it, I thought of like who my godly parent is and something based off of what is related to her. But no, a sword makes sense for who I am. And also the usefulness of it makes a lot of sense too.
Yeah. Having a sword would be really cool. Especially one that you can like make small, like the pen, and take it places with you.
I love that both times when you said it, Ella Enchanted book, my brain yes. went to the Mortars map. And so I made the Find My Friends joke. And until you explained that you can actually see the person, I was like, oh, right, I forgot that. And so both times I had to be reminded that's what it was.
Not us like having the same brains 3 years ago.
We
3 years later.
Anymore than we yeah. I mean, at least we haven't regressed, right?
I hope not. Mm. You know? I think we yeah, sure.
Sure.
All right. So my question based on the show, because they have a moment where where Percy's like, why is she the leader? And Grover's like, she's the leader. I don't know, man. So my question is, what kind of role do you think you would take up on a quest? Like, would you be a leader? Would you be a sassy little thing like Percy, a peacemaker or something else?
I would want to be a disruptor like Percy, but from all of the group projects I had to do through grad school, through undergrad, I am a leader. And I think my opinion is best. And I think I implemented the best. And so I tend to take charge. Also, the fact that I would love not to be a leader, but no one else steps up. And I hate it when no one steps up. So if someone else, if it's in a group setting, if you were there, I know you have opinions and your opinions are stronger than mine. And so I will let you do what you want to do. And like, we see that in our friend group that there's like some of us who step back a little bit, but in all situations where I have been in a group setting for like a project, I have to step up and I don't want to.
Mm. Yeah. No, that's so funny that you bring that up, because I was thinking that the real life analogies for a quest are basically a group project or like trying to plan a trip with more than one person. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I feel like I will go more into a leader role, but not in like a loud kind of way. Especially like in a group project, I tend to just do all the work quietly. But I think that I would like to specifically be the planner. Like, I would make sure that we know where we're going. We have stops planned out. We have like, hotels booked, you know, That's the kind of role I would take on.
Yeah. I'm more of a facilitator of like, hey, like you're being quiet. You haven't voiced your opinion. What do you think? Making sure everyone gets their voice heard, and then like being very much more of like the person holding the gavel rather than writing things down.
Yeah. We do a great group project. I mean, that's basically what this is. Podcast is our group project.
And I think we've done well so far, episode 124. So.
Yeah.
I've been watching you go off on Instagram. I'm like, yes, queen, go be insane.
Really
I love
going
it.
Off. It's the hype of the show is really... I'm like, I need to take a break from social media after the show ends, though, for real.
A cleanse.
Yeah, a cleanse.
All right, my question is, if you were given the same betrayal prophecy line as Percy, would you have chosen friends or stranger?
Definitely friends, because I would think that even if they're allegedly going to betray me, I might be able to recognize the signs in a friend versus a stranger. Like, I might know when they're lying. I could maybe manipulate them. I'd be like, I know your mom. I'm going to call her and tell her, you know?
You're being mean to me.
Yeah. You're being mean to me.
That's so interesting. I think I would choose strangers because their betrayal wouldn't hurt as much.
Yeah, that's fair.
If we became friends along the way, that's like a plus, and then they don't betray me, that's a plus, right? It's kind of like choosing a roommate.
Yeah, you're like going to convince them not to betray you, actually. Yeah. Whereas my method is to manipulate them if they do betray me, or like track them like a hawk.
Well, it's like choosing a roommate in the sense of like, oh, you shouldn't room with someone you're already friends with because you might lose them as a friend, and that's devastating. But if you room with someone who is a stranger and then you become friends, that's a plus.
Mm-hmm. And it's like a very unique kind of friendship because it's like, oh, we live together. We know each other very intimately, but we might not have been friends otherwise. Kind of the same thing with like a quest going from all the quests I've been on, but going on a quest with a stranger, like you would know them very intimately, or if they betray you, no loss. Wasn't your friend.
It's like a net gain of zero.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, well, that is the end of our episode 3 recap. Next week, we will be doing episode 4, discussing all the things in that one. We're excited about that. And just as a reminder to listeners, we, as we said, we got the first 4 episodes, we got advanced screenings, so our recap episodes will be able to drop the same day that the episodes do, but after episode 4 is when there will be a little bit more of a lag, because we have to have time to watch the show and record and then edit. So we'll figure out our timeline for that. But just a heads up, if you're really relying on our day of drops, it's only a treat for the first 4, unless you want to harass Disney to give us some more screeners.
I know. Makes our lives easier too.
It does. Yeah, it's fantastic.
If you are curious what we're talking about when we talk about our old outlines, you can totally read them if you join our Patreon. It's only $3 a month, and you get to see us talking to each other and ourselves, including a great version of Cliff Notes for you if you don't remember the chapters.
Yeah, exactly. There's a link to that Patreon and also a link to send us an audio message in our episode description.
Our social media is Camp Half Pod on all social platforms, including TikTok now. And we have our email, camphalfpod@gmail.com, if you want to write out something more, attach images, etc., etc.
And don't forget to rate and review wherever you are listening to us. It means a lot when you leave such lovely reviews. So thank you.
And bye-bye.